Hello, everyone. Welcome to Strictly Hip Hop. Very special episode for a live in-person sit-down interview with my man, John Connor. John, how you doing? The people's rappers in the building, man. How you feeling?
I'm feeling good. Blessed as always, man.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I hate to start this at no, but I did want to ask this because I thought of you when I first heard the news, the passing of DJ K Slay. Now I know that you two have, I think it's like 8 projects you've been on with him. Like it's quite a bit. And the last one, if I remember, was the Back to Bars one with Joel Locksmith and a whole bunch of other people. So. I just wanted you to speak on DJ K Slay because, you know, he's a legend, and, you know, his Dad Piff mixtapes were, you know, some of the stuff that I grew up on. So I just wanted you to kind of speak to your memories and moments with him.
Man, it's still hard, and I'm still processing, you know, the fact that Slay is gone. There's a big void in hip hop, you know, without DJ K Slay, because before I was John Connor, or before I even thought about writing a rhyme, I grew up listening to K Slay mixtapes. You know what I'm saying? Drama King, like, you know what I'm saying? Just that was man, I can just remember when I was 17, 18, it was a guy that sold mixtapes in Flint, you know what I'm saying? And I remember getting this cat named DJ P Cutter, DJ K Slay, and I would buy just these mixtapes, and just I was so entranced by New York hip hop at that time. And K Slay was, you know what I'm saying, the voice for me of New York hip hop from those mixtapes. So even before I met him, he had an influence on my life because of how much of a beacon for hip hop he always has been. So, but it's just hard for me right now. It's hard for me still to process, but I can't say enough good things about DJ K Slay. I know for the rest of my career, I'll always put his name on something or do something in his memory, because DJ K Slay, the reason why there's a void in hip hop is not just the things that everybody saw that he did, like the music that he put out, or him being a DJ at Hot 97 in New York, or him being a DJ at Shea 45. Behind the scenes in hip hop, he was such an important part of the culture because he didn't play the industry political game. The game of, I'm only gonna rock with you if you have a hit record out right now, or I'm only gonna put you on my project if you got the big chains and millions of dollars,
or this connect, like, or this that, artist that I
absolutely
like,
he was rocking with everybody. Times when I was hot and on fire, times when I was cold as ice, I was always getting that phone call from DJ K Slay, yo, Connor, and it was all based on my talent and who I am as a person. It was never about I'm only rocking with you for this or that. It was based off of the things that life should be about, is why K Slay was so important, not just to hip hop, but just life in general. It's like, he didn't just talk about it, he lived it. It was like he messed with John Connor strictly based off of talent and who I am, just as a spirit and as a person. I think that's how we all should be. And I don't think there's enough of that in the music industry or just in life, period. So we lost a big part of just humanity with losing K Slay, because he lived it. He lived hip hop to the day he died. K Slay did graffiti. You know what I'm saying? He was a DJ. He did put together albums and projects with up and coming lyricists. So every way that you could possibly live hip hop, K Slay did it. And he always gave back to the culture. Like, I remember he put me and Kendrick Lamar on a song early. This is way back. I'm thinking, like, this is probably like 2013, 2014, before I was buzzing like that and before Kendrick was buzzing like that. So it's like he always made sure he looked for talented people and more than anything had a good heart. And, you know, I could talk about Slay for days and days, but he just meant a lot to me, more than just a DJ, more than just these personas of John Connor and DJ K Slay. It was times where in the music business, it was a time period where I was immature and naive, and I didn't really know my way around the industry like that, right? He would always call me and give me advice on how to not make mistakes and not to fall into certain pitfalls. So that's going above and beyond, because you got sometimes people who are your managers who don't do that, who don't steer you in the right direction. They try to steer you in the wrong direction so they can get your money and leave you where you at. K Slay wasn't never my manager. He never got paid off of anything that had to do with John Connor. He taught me what I needed to know just because it was the right thing to do. So it's, you know, it's going to be an extreme void in just humanity, and especially in hip hop without Slay here. But I think cats like me and all of the other people that he reached out to and always worked with and left an impression on and let and made an impact in their lives, I think will always keep his spirit alive. We owe it to Slay to do that. And I'm definitely going to do that.
That's awesome. And you touched on one thing that is interesting, because that's what I always say when I talk about rappers passing. And we were actually just speaking about this a little bit before the mics were on, and we were talking about Pac and we were talking about Nipsey, and the word you said hit me is the humanity, because that's always the part that I agree more than anything else is, you know, of course this artist has their own family, they have friends, and they have a legacy. That's always like, hip-hop is a culture. It's right, it's not just a genre of music. So within it, you know, there's more than just the music. When an artist dies, you don't just lose the music, you lose, like you said, the humanity, the connections that they make, the impact, the guidance, everything that they offer to hip hop. You know, it's not just simply the music. So I'm glad you touched on that. I do want to, can I ask you the one question that I know, and I'm asking this just for fun.
You can ask me anything.
I know I can ask you anything, sure. But I'm asking you, I just want to preface that this is the one question for fun, because I know you got to hate this question. Yes, so I'm hoping that this interview right here, this Strictly Hip Hop interview is going to be, oh, that's the camera, my bad. The Strictly Hip Hop interviews, this is going to be the one where hopefully John doesn't have to answer this.
This
no
is
more.
A big bill for this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's go.
How's your relationship with Dre? I see you get it like you've addressed it in your music.
Yeah.
We even talked about it in our first sit down for SOS1. Mm-hmm. And I see you get it on Twitter, I see you address it in the music, and it's just like every other question is like, when's the next project coming out? Then there's like two more questions that's like, mm-hmm. Are you and Dre cool? Yeah. It's like, it's every time. So I feel like it's got to be getting exhausted answering that, because I know the answer. I know the answer is good. You know.
Well, yeah. You know what? I don't so much mind that question, because he played a part in my life.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I get it. Dre is like, to most people, he's like a figure that they feel like he's like out in outer space somewhere that you'll
mythical.
Right, he's like a mythical person. So they feel like they'll probably never get a chance to have conversations with him. So the best thing to that is like to ask somebody that know him. You know what I'm saying? So I get it. Like, so when people ask me questions about that part of my life, I don't know. I don't get offended or nothing. It's like if somebody asks me something about high school or something, or if they ask me, like, you know what I'm saying?
It's
like,
just a chapter.
It's a chapter of my life. Yeah. So how is me and Dre? I always look at things like, whatever the last conversation we had is the way it is, unless I get told otherwise. Mm-hmm. So with that being said, we're good.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Last That's time awesome. I talked to him like a little bit after he had the situation.
Yeah, the brain aneurysm.
Yeah. And so that's like years after I wasn't on Aftermath no more. So, you know what I mean? So it's all good.
And to see him perform at the Super Bowl, after that was, you know, awesome.
That
like
was
to him to look healthy, you know what I mean? Like,
that was,
I mean,
dope,
we know he's a workout warrior, but like still, you know, to go through something like that. And
that was the most important thing to me. Like, you know what I'm saying? Beyond like, people go through doing business together and not doing business together, but there was also a personal relationship there as well, where it was like, as like we talking again, the human factor, you know what I'm saying? Regardless of if me and Dr. Dre ever make records together again, I was out there for 5-6 years. And over time, you don't just leave a situation and you just don't have no feelings at all for a person,
gone,
right? So it was cool that we talked around that time. So to simplify and answer the question, we good, man. Yeah. Like last time we talked, we laughed like we normally did. We talked about bullshit, and you know what I'm saying? And it was all good. And it was just good to see that he was healthy and doing good. So yeah, we cool.
That's awesome, man. I hope that this interview is, again, like, you know, because I always feel for you, like seeing that, you know, like seeing like the same, and it's not just a Dre thing. It's like if anybody gets asked the same question, like, and it's like, you've addressed it on Twitter, you address it in the music. So like, I could understand, you know, getting a little bit like, come on, man. Like, I've already said it, like, it's good. It's like, but let's talk about SOS. So before we get into, I want to jump into some songs too, but before we start there. So first of all, it's your second time releasing How does it feel? Because I asked you this kind of similarly on SOS, but I wanted to get your perspective now. Like, how does it feel to just be able to go back to after that 5-6 year period of now having the total freedom to be able to release what you want, how you want? Like, are you still adjusted to that? Is there still a part of you? Because I mean, you even had a line in, even had a line saying, you know, that, you know, I'm scared to say my album's going to drop because what if it don't again? So yeah. are you, do you feel like now you're fully adjusted to, yeah, you know, the independent life again?
Absolutely, man. Yep. That line was on the song. Thank you. Yeah. Right. On SOS one.
The outro. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Where I was kind of documenting mm-hmm. the way I was feeling when I was right. still on a major. And so, yeah, now I feel good. Like, I feel great. Like, yeah. I love being in control of my destiny. I love everything being all on me. You know, I think that you came in this world by yourself, you're going to leave by yourself. So you should be able to stand by every decision that you make. You know, when at the end of the day, when you look in the mirror, it got to be whether you fail or whether you succeed, you don't have nobody to blame or congratulate but yourself and God. Like, you know what I'm saying? It ain't nobody else's fault. Why you succeeded or failed is yours. It's all on you. You got to take the good with the bad. So I feel amazing. Like, SOS one was just me being so happy to be able to have the freedom to do what I want. Yeah. And I think SOS two is kind of like, now I think you can even probably hear the fact that I've adjusted. And now it's not even so much about just, I'm so happy to put stuff out. Now it's like, okay, let me reclaim that spot of, I am an artist that knows how to put together a solid body of work. And now let's get back to doing what I was doing, you know what I'm saying, in the beginning, putting together dope projects and just being as consistent as possible. And I think you could hear that in SOS too. So it just feels great. I'm adjusted. I'm settled. And I'm just ready for wherever this road going to take me now, man.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting with S. I lump SOS one and two together, you know, just because it is a series and I feel like it's almost a state of mind. You know, you talk about the 2 years between those two, like how I feel with this project. I still feel it, the urgency that you had in SOS. How do you capture that energy 2 years later? Or is it just that easy when you had, you know, the 5-6 years that you had,
man,
to tap into it?
How do you capture it? Cause you wake up feeling that way for real in real life. Like, you know what I'm saying? So,
right.
So it's like any song I sound pissed on is cause I probably was legitimately pissed like in real life. Or what? I'm just a person that, my music is basically however I feel in real life and me just trying to find a way to verbalize that and make a song out of it. So whatever you hear on my projects is legitimately how I wake up feeling, or things that I've thought about, or just things that I feel like I want to scream out and shout to the world. So capturing that energy is not really a problem because it's always there. And I'm an Aries, and Aries are fire signs. So that means we always just there's always just like this fire that's inside of us. And whenever I hear music or create music, it's almost like pouring gasoline on a fire. And so it's not a problem to catch it. You know, it's just a matter of just directing it and just making sure I'm satisfied with it in the end.
That's awesome. Let's jump into some songs. Actually, before we do that, I do want to quickly touch on the documentary series, which Royce's narration is awesome, man. Like, I'm a big Royce the 5'9" fan, so like I was already geeked, but just the words he uses, you know, in the intros of everyone to really set the tone of each episode so far. I do remember you teasing back on Aftermath the documentary series leading up to your project. So is this the same documentary series, or is it a new one?
Well, it's crazy. Obviously, like, the story ended up evolving and changing. Right. So yes, I had the idea to do a docu-series way back then.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But then my story changed. So
yeah.
then the
so you, to,
you know
you gotta make some changes. Yeah, yeah.
Right. So you gotta make some changes. So yeah, the general idea is the same one.
Okay.
But like I say, my life evolved. So then the story itself had to evolve.
And you know, I heard legendary stories of the South by Southwest John Connor experience.
Yeah, and that was in episode two, right?
Yeah, yeah, that was in episode two. And I had a friend of mine, he's no longer making music, but when he was, you have a song with him, Drew Parks.
Drew 32.
Yeah. Yeah, I had him on the podcast a while ago and we were just talking, and he's actually like a lawyer now and everything. Like, you know,
he's a lawyer?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah, he graduated from U of M, man. So
that
shout out to him.
Crazy. Shout out to Drew 32.
Yeah, and so we were talking, and he was telling me about the whole South by Southwest experience of just like, you know, watching you pull 30, 40 deep, and then to see that, like, cause I was a fan of yours at the time, but I don't know, like, if I just didn't see it on social media or what, but I didn't see clips of that. So to see it in the documentary, it was like that myth, you know, like, cause I've always heard the stories of your South by Southwest 30, 40 deep rolled up and just, you know, and just dressed like soldiers, man.
I got to give a shout out to No Limit Records and Master P and Beats by the Pound and all of them, because that idea was inspired by them. You know, I saw, I was a big fan of No Limit growing up, you know what I mean? And so I remember it was on some like hood DVD. It was like Hood Fights Volume 7, right? Yeah. And there was a random clip of No Limit in Miami, and it was like 50 of them. And they all had on like I'm about it shirts, and they had the van wrapped with the ice cream man available now, right? Yeah. And I'm a kid like, yo, that is crazy. Like, and I'm like, I want to do that. Like, that's, if you're going to make an impression, or if you're going to, you got to do that. So when I finally got in position and I had my crew together, I knew exactly at the time, the dude that was managing me, my man Young Sav, he was telling me about South by Southwest.
Yeah.
And I had never even heard of the festival before this. And so I'm like, yo, if you telling me I'm about to go to a place where every top artist, underground and mainstream, is going to be all in one location, we got to make a statement.
Yeah.
Because I'm from Flint, Michigan, where it's not really a lot of people, especially at that time, there was nobody from Flint, like, you know what I'm saying, moving around in the game like that. So I'm like, yo, I don't have a deal. So I don't have these marketing dollars. I got to figure out a way to make sure everybody leaves South by Southwest thinking about AVM and John Connor. So we did that, man. We was inspired by No Limit, went and got the army fatigues. Yeah. We went to like a real army surplus store, I'm talking about, some of my dogs had the canteens and the bulletproof vests. It was crazy, but we took two vans from Flint, and that was like, I think that trip was like, I don't know, 48 hours, from Michigan to Texas or wherever, to Austin or whatever the case may be. So it was crazy. And that was some of the most fun I ever had. Like, can you imagine, man, we walking down the street in Austin, Texas. I felt like I was the president or something. Because we walking down the streets and, you know, it's all of these, little bars and pubs and all of that. Yeah. So we walking down the street and it's mad people in the street. But then it's people like waving at us. So I'm feeling like, yo, like, what's good? I'm feeling like, I don't know, like a president or something. Like, I really did. Like, I was the king of fucking England or some shit. But it was just so cool, man, because everywhere we went, we attracted attention.
Yeah.
And I could just remember like certain industry people coming up to us and just telling us like, congratulations. Like, they like, yo, y'all did it how it was supposed to be done, because we weren't on any of the big stages. But I remember all the industry people kept saying, all anybody is talking about is that, y'all.
Yeah.
Have you seen this group of people with picket signs and army fatigues? And so mission was accomplished. Yeah. We did what we came to do. So Absolutely. That's a beautiful time. That was some of the most fun I ever had within hip hop, man.
That's awesome, man. Let's jump into SOS too. Uh-huh. You know, I mean, that is the project. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, let's talk about it. Let's start with the lead single. So 2020 Survivor. So you talk about all these passings and deals, and it's all aligning with your deal getting out of that. Aligns with literally right as the world shifts on its head between the pandemic, the situation with George Floyd, everything. Like, how did that affect you? Because, you know, you gotta be thinking like, man, I just fought like hell to get my independence back, and now the whole world is just like different, mm-hmm. like forever different, forever changed. Like, mm-hmm. like that's why I feel 2020 Survivor is so interesting to me, because it's like that's a very unique situation that you were in.
Mm-hmm. First, a couple of different ways I look at 2020 Survivor. For one, it was like all of us all sitting here now, we all survived 2020. Right. A lot of people didn't make it. You know, like it was so many people that passed away in that time that like, y'all remember like that weird first couple months of like the quarantine and the pandemic and all that. That was wild.
Yeah.
Like, that's why for me, it's like, I can't understand how majority of hip hop artists, how are we not talking about that? That's some of the craziest shit that ever happened. And we all lived through it. We all every day had to turn on the TV and see like this laundry list of people dying. Yeah. We all turned on the TV and seen like in New York, this is happening. In LA, this is happening. I remember when the quarantine first started, it might've been like in France or something and they couldn't leave their house. And somebody started playing like My Heart Will Go On the piano. And then people were like singing it out of there. It was like the most beautiful shit I ever seen of like humans all feeling one thing at the same time. And you mean to tell me that after all of that, we didn't learn nothing?
You don't got nothing to say.
Nothing to say?
Yeah.
Like you don't remember like these people like... This is crazy. Yeah. Like, how are we back literally talking about, I'm sorry, excuse the expression. We back talking about hoes and the bag and bitches and dope and Draco and killing and how? It's like we just all went through the craziest shit. Like, and now we're back talking about the same stuff. So, yeah, I love humans. And like I said, I am a spiritual person. And I do believe that we're supposed to use our gifts We're supposed to use our gifts for something good. So it's like, I couldn't understand how we immediately went back to the same old shit. You know, it's like crazy. It's like the little kid who's like doing tricks on his bike or something like that. Some shit he know he ain't supposed to be doing. He fall and he busts his head and then he start doing the same shit over again. So for me, it was like 2020 Survivor meant for one, wow, we all survived 2020. We should all be thankful to still be here because it's like hundreds of thousands of people around the world. That wasn't something that just affected the United States. It affected the world and so many people passed away. So we all should be blessed that we 2020 survivors. That's first and foremost. Then as an artist, it affected me what I just said. Like, how are we back talking about the same old BS? Yeah. And then it goes into just my personal accounts of everything. Like, my mom lost her childhood heroes in like 4 months. You know, you think about all of the people from her era that passed during that time. Then like thinking about Chadwick Boseman that died, who is from my nephew. I say my nephew lost his child. Think about Chadwick Boseman and Kobe Bryant and all these people. Yeah. And though Kobe didn't die of COVID, these deaths were all around the same time.
It was all 2020.
This is all around the same time. And think about Tiny Lister, Debo from Friday, and John Witherspoon from Friday, and we think about I'm thinking about, man, it's so many people that passed away that you almost can't even. But so I just was thinking about all of that, like, wow, we all went through a certain amount of trauma together. And how did that actually affect all of us? All of us are acting normal, but are we?
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, for one, just we all should be grateful that we 2020 survivors because, you know, it should make us just appreciate life, man.
Absolutely. Like, I had a situation where one of my best friends, his mother passed in February of 2020. Mm-hmm. So right before COVID hit. And so, like, you know, it was something that was a very quick downhill thing. So we were all devastated by it. But then we looked a month later and we reconvened and we're seeing, you know, people can't even have funerals. Like a month later, my grandma had passed and I couldn't even see the casket. You know what I mean? Because of COVID and the pandemic. So it's like, you know, to be 2020 survivors is a real thing. And, you know, and it changed everything for everybody.
Everything. One time somebody told me that hip hop should serve as a, or music in general should serve as a time capsule for the generations after us, to where when they listen back to the music that was coming out at that time period, they can almost visualize what life was like back then. And I seen somebody say, this is possibly the first time in the history of humanity where music, and more specifically hip hop, has not been a reflection of what's actually going on at the time. That's why before the cameras came on, we talked about Kendrick. I think it's dope, like what Kendrick did with the video, because that is what music is supposed to be used for. If a child in the year 2055 watches that video, they'll know, like, wow, that's what was going on, yeah, they'll know about the things that was important to us in society. Yeah,
in that moment.
In that moment.
Yeah.
You feel me? Yeah. The things that, as artists, we supposed to be saying the things in our music that aren't in the history book.
It's a record book, yeah. It's We're creating our own record book.
You feel me?
Yeah.
So for me, that's kind of what, like, my projects are, and more specifically, we're talking about 2020 Survivor. It's like, right, I want in the year 3000 and whatever, 3021, you know what I'm saying? I want somebody to go back and listen to 2020 Survivor and be like, oh shit. So that's what was going on. That's how our society got like this, because this happened back then, which caused the domino butterfly effect of so many other things. And it's almost like your music should almost serve as like time capsules and history books for future generations.
Absolutely. Let's jump into a song that I think segues to this a little bit, is Afterlife. Love the tone of the record. Everything about it's great. But you know what's funny is it takes me back to one line that you say on Flashing Lights on Kanye, on the Best in the World Kanye. Mm-hmm. And you say, life is a balance and there is a compromise. For a part of you to live, a part of you has to die. Do you feel like a part of you died with that deal at Aftermath?
Absolutely. Before my situation on a major label, I feel like I was so naive and so kind-hearted, and so I trusted everybody. You know what I'm saying? And I think that a certain level of maturity had to come. I had to go through certain things so that I understood, you know, your respect and your trust is something that should be earned. You know, don't give everybody everything right out the gate. And I think that in the beginning of my career, just who I was as a person, I would give it all to somebody. Like, as soon as you meet me, you got all of my love, my respect, my admiration. You got all of that just out the gate. And, you know, sometimes, you know, in life, you just can't do that. Sometimes you have to protect yourself. And I'm not saying be an asshole to people.
Right.
But you also have to be mindful.
Guard your heart.
You have to, because some people, if they learn certain things about you, they'll use you against you. Mm-hmm. So that's what I learned. So I do think that part of me died. He's still in there somewhere.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? If you get close enough to me, you'll get a chance to meet him. But it's like, no, I think that, that metaphorically speaking, yes, a part of me did die in order for this version of me to be.
Yeah. And that was just such an interesting parallel for me, because that is right as you are starting, like, that song comes out right as you are starting your Aftermath venture too. Mm-hmm. So for you to say that and then to full circle back to that lyric, you know, 5-6 years later, or now 8 years later, right? Yeah, because it was 2014 when you dropped that tape. So
yeah, absolutely.
Wow. Okay, let's jump to Hall of Fame. So this is just an interesting question. I like, so, you know, fun music video. Yes. Watched it. You're an executive now, so like, now I want to pick like the executive brain of you. So when you're choosing a song for a music video, like, what's that process like, and including creating that, like, as you're creating the body of work, how do you start to identify singles, music videos? Like, how does that work for you as an artist? I always like to ask every artist that, because I think it's interesting.
You want to know specifically to Hall of Fame, or you want to know just in general?
Just in general.
Okay, in general, it's more so I think about, normally with me, the way it goes is, what's the attention grabbing song first? Mm-hmm. What is that song that's going to be so, one of those songs that's like, yo, did you hear what he just said? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So thus you get 2020 Survivor. Or even from the beginning of my career, like, the first video I ever dropped was Epic. You know what I'm saying? And then on While You Were Sleeping, the first one was, what was the name of that joint?
Was it the intro?
Scriptures is what the name Scriptures, was.
Yep.
Yeah, pray for my enemies. Yeah. So that's another one where it's every time, if you notice, that's the pattern with my career. Or with Unconscious State, the first joint that I dropped, the video, I think the only video from Unconscious State was I Don't Need a Reason.
Yeah.
So it's like,
Season 2, Someone Like Me. That was the first one I saw. That was the first video I saw of you.
Yeah. So for me, it's always that attention grabbing yeah. song with a message. Mm-hmm. Let me just get your ears for a second. Then normally videos 2 and 3 are probably, all right, let's have a little fun. You know what I'm saying? And then by the time you get to videos 4, 5, 6 or whatever, they're just records that I like.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
It's just like, let me do something that creatively I want to do.
Yeah, I want to do. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But that's normally how it goes with me.
That's interesting, man, because that makes total sense now. Because for me to see, that's how I first came across you, with someone like me at music field, and like with the lights and you at the mic, I was like, this dude's a superhero. I'm like, you know what I mean?
Thank
like,
you, man.
This dude looks like a superhero. My thing is, rappers are always superheroes. Like, that's my favorite saying. But like, that music video is one of the like moments that kind of like crystallizes it. You know what
Thank
I mean?
You.
Let's talk about the track Big Homie. So this track is interesting to me because you seem to be talking of more of the street perspective of a big homie. And it's also something that I get from the documentary of you wanting to not only be like a big homie to the world, but especially to Flint. Mm-hmm. And I've always been fascinated with, more so because that's what I relate to, is the music side of big homie. Like in the music industry, you see, you know, now we have all these different, in hip hop particular, you have different generations and regions now and all different sorts of styles. So I just kind of wanted to get your perspective on Big Homie in general, like the concept of it. Like how do you think those two worlds of being a big homie are similar, and where do you think and what do you think is like the key to fixing them, and where does that fall? Does that fall more on the youth or on the OG?
I think that the responsibility falls on the older person because they're the one who's more experienced. They've lived more life, and the young person is looking up to the older person, you know? Yeah. And I think that it's our responsibility when we become the older person to do the best that we can so that the next generation don't have to go through the things that we went through. Mm-hmm. And Big Homie is like, it bothers me and agitates me when people that know better pretend that they don't know better to get money. And what I mean by that is, like, so many times I see in the music business, it's dudes that are not in the hood. They not any of that. They got money. They're good. Their families are good. But they're making music that make kids that are in the hood go kill people, go sell dope, go not take care of their kids and disrespect the mother of their children. You know what I'm saying? But it's like, this dude over here, he's not doing the things that he's saying in his music, but he's saying it to a bunch of kids that are doing that. Because now it's like the community that dude lives in, the rich guy, the rich rapper, he don't live in that community where his words are affecting his everyday life. So he doesn't care about what he's saying or what he's doing, because it's like, I'm getting money off of it. That's all I care about. These kids who aren't rappers, you know what I'm saying, are constantly listening to this toxic music every day, and they're trying to emulate what they hear and what they see in the videos, not knowing that in the video they're going to go cut, and then that part, all the females.
It's a separate life.
It's a whole different life. Yeah. And, you know, that kind of agitated me. So I do. I think it's on us once we become the older generation. You know, I think it's on us to be the example. And that's all. That's all. I just want to provide like balance, man. That's it. You know, I just want to give these young cats. I just want to let them know that you don't have to be self-destructive or toxic to get to the bag or whatever. You know, you could be yourself. You could uplift yourself. You could uplift your community and still get to the bag.
That's awesome. Let's jump to Stolen Moment. Now, this is my favorite record on the whole album.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
The hook is so, like, to me, it's like it's everything I love about rap. It's that 2000s, early 2010s, you know, like you get that soulful hook and then you have the lyrical rapper on the verses, and it just bridges together so perfectly for me. But you talk on that, you know, that the concept Stolen Moment. So I want to know when does your mind start to shift from my moment is being taken from me to I need to create a new moment? Like when in your mind did that shift, that focus?
Ask me the question again.
Okay. So when it comes to like the idea of a stolen moment, the concept of a stolen moment, mm-hmm. when in your career did you went from feeling, okay, my moment is stolen from me. When did you start to shift your focus and your mindset into being how do I create my new moment, or how do I create a new moment?
You know what? That's a cool question. It's always been in me. I've always looked at things like, it ain't over until you're dead.
Yeah.
You know, it's not over unless you quit, that type of thing. Yeah. So for me, whenever I look at a situation, it's like, it's so weird, man, because it's never been like a big thing to me. Like if I try something and it doesn't work, I just try something else. That's just always been my nature, just period, just in life. So like, you know, more just to, as an example, is like being signed to a major and that didn't go how I wanted it to go. For me, it wasn't like, oh, the woe is me, the world hates me. It was just like, okay, figure it out.
Yeah.
Figure out something else, do something else. But the song Stolen Moment is more so called Stolen Moment because it talks about what certain friendships and relationships could have been. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like a moment has been stolen from these two people or these relationships. It's like this could have been something great, but we allow these moments to get stolen from us because of the journey. Instead of being strong enough to stick with each other and all of that type of thing, it's like the moment gets stolen because now you're arguing about different things. Yeah. Now you like that, like whether it's women, whether it's money, whether it's contracts, whether I've watched so many of these things come between people's friendships and those type of things. So that was where I was at with Stolen Moment. Is like, you know, how do we let these beautiful moments get stolen from us? Like you think of like a, and I'm not saying anything that people don't already know. Like you look at, I grew up looking up to like Jay-Z and Dame Dash. Yeah. Like, you know what I'm saying? And it's like, then for them to break up, it was like, damn.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, how does that happen? Yeah. You know, you look at, you know, just so many people. That's Jay and Dame was the ones that was on the top of my head. But so many like.
It's Jay and Ye for a lot of us, too. For a lot of my generation.
Or even like now you see like Kid Cudi and Kanye going through it. I love when Cudi and Kanye created together. And it's like, damn, how do we end up in these stolen moments with the people that we love? Where it's like, damn, now everything that we used to love. Think about how many dope moments like Ye and like Jay probably had. But now those moments are stolen for whatever reason. So it's like, that's pretty much where my heart was at with that joint, man.
Okay, that's interesting. That makes sense too when you look at the last line of the second verse, when you say, you know, it's still love if you reach out to me, but you know,
but you gotta keep going.
You gotta keep going. Let's talk about success, and I just want to briefly touch on this record because not only do I like how it flows right after Stolen Moment to success, I just thought that was a good flow, but the narrations that you have sprinkled in throughout the album, I wanted to know, I love especially that one too, like when it talks about, you know, setting up anyone that is what was the specific words, living out
a worthy idea,
a predestined goal or a preset goal.
Because that's what they want to do.
Yeah, because that's what they want to do. I love that. But where did those narrations come from?
Earl Nightingale is his name. Earl Nightingale. You should actually...
My producer's shaking his head like,
Word. Yes. So anybody listening to this right now, go listen to The Strangest Secret by Earl Nightingale. And he break it all down. Those are just little parts and pieces, but he break it all down.
All down, okay.
Yeah, and I encourage anybody to go listen to it. But he said the person who is successful is anybody that's chasing a worthy ideal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, success is the teacher who wanted to be a teacher.
Yeah.
The guy that owns the corner store because that's what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
That is success. That's peace. That's what people need to understand, that it's like, stop comparing yourself to everybody else.
Yeah.
Everybody don't want the same type of woman.
Yeah.
Everybody don't want the same house. Yeah. Everybody don't want the same type of thing. And I think that we need to get out of this this mindset where we all think that everybody wants the same thing. So then we become hateful and bitter towards each other, right?
Because those that have it, yeah.
Right, exactly. It's like, but think to yourself, do you actually want that car that dude has? You probably don't. You probably didn't even think about that car until you saw it on Instagram.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Right. It was like you wasn't even thinking about it. So why now have you convinced yourself that you want this thing? Oh, you want it because you think that you're supposed to want it.
Yeah.
No, reach down in yourself and figure out, what do I want? Who am I? What makes me happy?
Yeah.
And so for me, it's like, even like I look at my life, like I'm completely happy because, and most people would be like, yo, that was so cool. You were signed to Dr. Dre. Do you ever regret da 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 da? No.
No.
Because my thing is like,
my goal is to be a rapper. And last I checked, you're still a rapper.
You feel me? It's like my, people have to understand, like, it was cool. And like I always tell people, I look at it like it was a college or it was a time, right. It was a time in my life. But people have to understand, I always wanted to be an artist. I always wanted to independently own. Like I told you, I came up looking up to Master P. Mm-hmm. So to me, success was, I want to do what P doing. I want to be able to make what I want to make. I want to be able to get the majority, if not all of the finances from the work that I put in. I want to be able to tour. I want to be able to reach out and touch the people. I want to be able to get paid for being myself.
Yeah.
And if I couldn't do that on a major label, then that ain't success to me, regardless of what you think. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, I don't care. Like, oh, if I was you, you not me.
Yeah.
So you don't know what makes me happy. So the thing is, like, now it's like to have peace. To know that I can go in the studio and make what I want to make. To know that if I go make a record tomorrow, I can put it out that night if I feel like it. There is nothing like being free. So it's I'm a living, walking, breathing example of figuring out what is peace for you. You know what I'm saying?
You have no idea how much I relate to that. Because like I've always said with this content creating is, you know, I have two big passions in life, and that's hip hop and NBA basketball.
Okay.
And so like my thing has always been, like, I don't care if I'm in a three-story crib or an apartment. My goal in life is to be able to meet Jay-Z, have a little conversation with him, and it could be off mic. It don't even have to be on mic for him to be like, that dude knows hip hop. That dude loves hip hop.
That's what's up.
Like, that's it. That's my goal. So like, to me, it's like moments like this interview. Like, these are moments that are, that's the goal. It's not the million streams or the, you know, or whatever. It's the moments of connecting with the people that, you know, got me into this passion, got me into this, you know, this culture. And so, so I relate to that so heavily, what you just said, man.
That's love,
awesome.
Man.
That's awesome. Let's talk about Blow Up. Okay. Let's talk about Blow Up. So, you know, my favorite line on the whole project is, y'all want me to blow up just to get a version of me that's watered down. One of my favorite lines, literally the whole album. But, you know, I look back on your career and I see Unconscious State, and, you know, you were charting on Billboard, you know? So like, clearly to me, there's a world in which John Connor can do both. Do you feel that way?
I do. I think,
or was it just that situation that you're kind of referring to more specifically?
I think for one, I'm at peace with wherever I'm supposed to be.
Wherever you're supposed to
be. You know what I'm saying? Whatever that is. I know I'm going to work hard every day. I'm going to try to reach as many people as I possibly can. And wherever it's meant for me to end up and however many people I'm meant to speak to, I am so at peace with that. As long as I can pay the bills, help my moms and the people I love, that is peace and that is success for me. The song Blow Up was like, it was like, because people always, and I love my fans. I want to say, anybody, if you a fan of mine, if you are cameras, if you a fan of mine, thank you so much. Because my fans, they so passionate. And they like, I just want John Connor to blow up. I just can't wait for John Connor to blow up. And it's like, I wanted to give my fan base peace and solace. And like, yo, what y'all think blow up is, I don't know if I want that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I want to be able to speak to people. Like, I love like my dog Chris Webby or Dizzy Wright. Or even Tech N9ne, right?
Yeah.
If my career path is like to me, that would be a beautiful thing for me.
Yeah.
That dude feeds his family and makes a dope amount of money off of doing what he wants to do. He owns his own company, tours whenever he wants to, puts out his own music. It's like, but can Tech N9ne still go out if he wants to? Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, yeah, he can. So to me, that's like the goal, to be able to independently do what you want to do, have a fan base of people that love you. And that's what it is. So for me, I was just telling my fan base, like, yo, to blow up the way y'all see it, there's a lot of people that are shiesty and scandalous that I don't want to be around. There's a lot of ass kissing that you have to do that I'm just not going to do. There's a lot of soul selling that I'm not going to do. So it's like, it's not as simple as if Connor makes this type of song, he's going to end up in these places with these other artists. No, it's a whole bunch of behind the scenes dumb shit that I'm not willing to do, like, because my who I am spiritually is more important than any money, car, jewelry, female. First week
sales projection.
You feel me?
Yeah.
I don't care about none of that shit. Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's like, it's cool. If I get back to that point and we charting and all of that, that's awesome. Beautiful. But what most people don't know is those charts are doctored up too.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, I'm not willing to play the game that is needed to be played to be in those positions. And much love to every artist that is. I'm not shitting on them.
Yeah.
It goes back to what we were saying. I know what's for me.
Yeah.
Your so success. Like, you
your
feel
success.
Me?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I like that. So in closing, I wanted to get this because this was the thing that I was mentioning. You know, you look at your catalog and across your whole catalog, there's series, there's Best in the World, there's SOS, you know, there's all these series. So is that like the movie buff in you that likes series? Like, what is from an artist perspective, what do you like about having your body of work into series instead of standalones?
I'm definitely a movie buff, and yes, those
is that where it comes from?
I would
the
say
idea
yeah.
of the bodies of work.
Yeah, I would say that because I'm in a different headspace. It kind of like it represents the headspace that I was in. So if you take the Calling Part One and the Calling Part Two, there's this young dude that is so passionate. And he don't know no better. All he wants is to be in the music business.
Yeah.
He just want to make it. Because you got songs like on the Calling Part Two, like Fame, where I literally talk about, I want fame so bad and da-da-da-da, right? But then he's starting to grow. And this is when you get to like season one and season two, where now I'm in the music industry and I'm giving you my perspective from, it's a different mindset. I'm not the guy from The Calling no more, because now I'm there where I thought I wanted to be. So you listen to season one and season two, and it's more so of a perspective of like, oh shit, I'm here now. I want to change the way business is done in the music business. I want to change this and change that. Then you go into now SOS one and two, where it's, he got exactly where he wanted to be. There's no higher than where I was at, right? I got a chance to look at the music industry from the top down. Wow. You know what I'm saying? So now it's like the guy from season one and season two, the dude that's now the SOS-minded guy is like, maybe even that wasn't what I thought it was. Maybe it was all about this spiritual thing the whole time. You know, maybe it was about find, like, now you see that that's where I'm at with my journey, where it's like more so it's about finding yourself, finding peace in yourself, because I got everything that I thought I wanted. The guy from The Calling, the guy from season one and two, the guy from Best in the World, that all he wanted was to be in the music business. He finally got it and realized, damn, maybe it was about something else this whole time.
That's awesome. And did that mess you up at all, like when you first were like, damn, I thought this is exactly
it did.
What I wanted.
No, it did. It messed me up. It was times like, I remember going through depressions. I remember going through just so much. And I remember I had everything that I ever thought I wanted back when I was in Flint and I didn't have no money and I was grinding and all that type of stuff. And I remember sitting in California and still feeling empty and alone, and it was just a terrible feeling. There's no, somebody said, having money, I can't remember what rapper said this, but they said, having money ain't everything, but you only find that out when you get money.
Yeah.
You feel me?
Man, I feel like it's on the tip of my head too, where that song
is from. Yeah, I can't remember who said it, but that was like some prolific shit.
Yeah.
That it is true.
Yeah.
That all while you struggling to get this certain amount of money, you feel like if I just had money, everything would change. And then when you finally get it, you like, it actually didn't. It actually kind of made shit worse. You know what I'm saying? So it's about that spiritual thing, that inner peace thing, man, that really matters in the end. And I guess that's where I'm at on my journey now, finding a way to just let people know, like, yo, it's about way more than what you think, man.
Absolutely. So, you know, only one more question in the closing. You know, where do you see your career going? You know, you got a team, fully independent.
Yes.
You got your college experience, as you put it. I saw your post the other day talking about, you know, doing Best in the World tape and then a Best in the World vault, three, which was a connection to SOS and Calling.
Yeah.
So that was really what sparked, like, I already had that question written. Uh-huh. And then when I saw you post that the other day, I was like, oh yeah, I'm really on to something. Like I cracked the code. It's definitely it definitely is the movie buff in you. But yeah. You know, where do you see everything going?
You know what? At this point, man, I have no clue. Just,
I mean, you even played around with the idea of, you know, not being John Connor anymore.
Yeah, I did. You know, when I say no clue is, man, I have completely surrendered to the Most High. All I know is I'm supposed to wake up every day, follow my spirit, and do what feels right.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And wherever that lands me, like, you know what I'm saying, I'll deal with it when it gets there. But I just want continued success. And like we learned on SOS2, success is just realizing a worthy ideal. I want to wake up every day and serve my community, and my community being planet Earth, you know what I'm saying, with a positive message. And yeah, so I thought about that, like the whole not being John Connor no more. It's like, I haven't made my mind up all the way on it, but it's like, from the perspective that I just gave you, right, of the calling and SOS 1 and 2 and Seasons 1 and 2 and Best in the World, it's like, wouldn't that almost be a fitting closure to have that closure and then the rebirth as a whole entirely other entity? Because it's like, where else does this John Connor persona go? It was created to do one thing, and during that process, he learned that his journey was about something else. Yeah. So it's almost like, isn't it fitting to put to rest John Connor and to just be Jan Kevin Freeman? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And now, what does he feel?
Yeah.
What is his perspective? Without wanting to chase these materialistic things, without being driven by these things, now having full perspective, what does Jan Freeman feel musically? What does Jan Freeman want to do? Because John Connor was created because I have so much for the industry and I want to change things within the industry. Man, life is bigger than the industry. It's about the world. It's about changing the world. It's about inspiring people in the world. So
about humanity, like we talked about. You know?
That's it.
That's it.
So, you know, I haven't 100% made my mind up on that, but the wheels have been turning of like, damn, you know, that 3 album is a closure to The Calling 1 and 2, The Best in the World, Seasons 1 and 2, and SOS 1 and 2. So it's just like, wow, what if that was the closure to John Connor, period?
Yeah.
Well, no, we're going to see when we get there.
We're gonna find out. But John, you're still John. John, I appreciate this conversation,
Come
man.
Come on, man. It's been awesome, man.
It's love. Seriously, you're a huge inspiration for not only the content I create, but just the music I consume. And to, you know, to say, like, I have a list of people that I want to interview before I die, and you were literally number 2. And I know I said that on the last one, but I need to remind you again on this you know, this is a big deal for me. So I greatly appreciate your time, man.
Thank you.
I know we got a lot of Detroit in here. I didn't have any Flint vinyls.
It's all and
I
was good. Like, we gonna get
I was
you
like,
some Flint
yeah, I was
vinyls.
Trying to, yeah, I was trying to figure out how do I make this room just a little bit Flint?
Yeah, you know what I mean? No, it's all
just
good.
A little
I appreciate
bit Flint.
It.
Well, you know how you can help me with that is you can start dropping some vinyls too.
You know what, you're right. We actually are. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, we're gonna have SOS2. We actually about to talk to the company about pressing up. Probably gonna start small with like 100 copies of CD and probably like 50 pieces of vinyl.
I'm there.
I just want to say thank you too, though, man. As an independent artist, man, like, your voice and your platform means so much to just spread the word about what I'm doing, because independent, you don't have a big machine. Everything that you do is based off word of mouth and whatever you got in your pocket to put towards marketing. So it's like, thank you so much, and I truly appreciate it, man.
Of course, man. Like I said, you know, with my reverence for you, you know, this is a conversation to me, not even an interview. You know,
it's
just a conversation. So to do this is awesome, man. And I appreciate you being on Strictly Hip Hop, man.
Oh, man, appreciate being here.
All right.
Love.